Morning. I realized that it's been a while since we've had a movie clip to introduce a sermon. So I tried really hard to find one. I actually posted on Facebook the theme of the sermon, asking kind of to crowdsource this attempt to find a good movie clip, but I'm sorry to say it's going to be a while longer to make a movie clip. However, I found a movie scene. Most of the things people suggested weren't quite Sunday morning appropriate. And the one I found fits perfectly, but it's a little too intense to show, but we're going to kind of talk about it. So it's from the movie Star Wars, and it fits well from one of the movies because my family just went through the first six movies in an effort to prepare for the upcoming one. My wife, who hates Star Wars, faithfully sat through hours and hours of lightsabers and Jedi to be with the family, and one of the most powerful storylines throughout that whole movie series is that of Anakin Skywalker, who, sorry for the spoiler alert, but becomes Darth Vader in about the third movie of the series. Most of those movies are building up to this dramatic scene where Anakin Skywalker has to make a choice. He walks in on a battle between the guy lying on the floor who is the Chancellor Palpatine, goes by many names, and the other guy who's a Jedi Knight called Mace Windu. The Jedi Knight has discovered that Chancellor Palpatine is in fact on the dark side. And he's come to arrest him and in fact tries to destroy him. But the Chancellor has promised Anakin something powerful. See, Anakin's discovered that his wife and child-to-be are in danger. But the Chancellor says that the dark side has the power to save their lives, to cheat death. So if he chooses the dark side, then he could save his loved ones. So Anakin walks in on this scene and has to make a choice. Does he go along with the Jedi and allow this Chancellor to be destroyed, or does he stop what's going on? Many of you probably know that he makes a very wrong choice and goes ahead and destroys the Jedi, saving the Chancellor, turns to the dark side, and this is the moment where he becomes Darth Vader. Well, we're currently in the middle of a 10-month-long series in the life of David, not the life of Anakin Skywalker. But David's life goes through a lot of ups and downs, and there's a lot of similar themes. We've seen David be introduced. We've seen him coronated as the new king. We've seen him Samuel decide that he is going to be the king. And we've seen this tension building between Saul, who currently sits on the throne, and David. We've seen how envy and jealousy has taken David from being the harpist and the military champion of Israel to being pursued by the king. This morning, we see the conclusion of that process. We see the final piece of that puzzle, where it becomes clear without a doubt that Saul is out to get David. Up until now, we've been kind of building toward this, and we've created these five chapters of David's life to help us categorize how the story flows. To date, we've been in the shepherd part of David's life. He's been the shepherd. But after today, David the shepherd becomes David the fugitive. This tension between David and Saul continues to be a major storyline, because Saul is currently the king, but David is supposed to be the king, and we've already seen that Saul is a failure. We've already lost faith in Saul, but the question remains whether David will be any better. Should we prefer David to Saul or not? In the ancient world, kings came and went all the time. One king would always usurp another. So the question that was always before you is, who do you really put your loyalty in? Who is worthy of your trust? What better person to help us feel that tension than somebody who has reason to be loyal to both Saul and David? Jonathan, the son of the king and best friend to David. Today we're going to see that tension come to a head through the eyes of Jonathan. And we're going to watch how Jonathan is forced to make a choice between his father and his friend. We're going to see Jonathan realize that you can't be loyal to both sides, that he has to betray someone in order to be loyal to the other. We're going to explore the loyalty of a traitor. And this is an important question for us to wrestle with, because we live in a world of promises. Companies make promises to us. Advertisements make promises to us. Friends, family, spouses, communities promise us that if we give them our loyalty, then things will go well. But we have to decide, where do we really put our loyalty? Whom do we trust? Jonathan will be a great help to us in these questions because he's a lot like us. He wants to keep everybody happy. He wants to find a way for everybody to get along. He doesn't want to have to make a decision. He doesn't want to even believe that a decision is necessary. But in the journey we'll see him make this morning, he will come to that conclusion that he has to choose. And that will help us to realize that we have to choose as well. You have to pick a side. We can't trust everyone. We can't be loyal to everything at the same time. What do we really think that following Jesus in Silicon Valley looks like? Is Jesus just one option among many? Or does following Jesus mean some other things have to be betrayed? Jonathan's going to be our guide as we wrestle with these questions this morning. Story picks up with David running for his life from Saul. If you remember last week, Saul was out to kill him. David had run to Samuel the prophet to try to hide from Saul. And Saul sent messengers and finally went himself trying to kill David. He gets to this school of prophets and he's overcome by the Spirit of God. He's been sent into a prophetic stupor and he can't hurt David. So David flees again, understandably surprised and kind of scared from all these activities. And this is where the story picks up. 1 Samuel 20, verses 1 through 2. Then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, "What have I done? Where is my guilt? And what is my sin before your father that he seeks my life?" And he said to him, that is Jonathan said to David, "Far from it, you shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. And why should my father hide this from me? It is not so." David does what most of us do when we're in trouble. You find a trusted friend, you run to them and complain. "This guy's trying to kill me. What have I done? What's going on?" And notice David's point. His point is that he doesn't deserve the treatment that he's receiving. He says, "I'm innocent. If I weren't innocent, why is he doing this to me?" And this sets up the main question of this story. Is David really innocent? Because Saul is the king. He's trying to kill a guy. Maybe he's got good reason. Maybe David's trying to usurp the throne. Maybe he's trying to overtake the king. Is David really innocent? That's the question that these events are going to answer for us this morning. And Jonathan is going to be the judge to determine this. It's important to figure this out because if we're going to choose where to put our loyalty, you need to choose rightly. You need to choose somebody who's innocent, not somebody who's trying to overthrow the current king. Now we can see this tension that Jonathan feels. David comes to him and says, "Your father's trying to kill me." And Jonathan says, "No, he's not. That can't be the case. My dad's a good guy. He would never do this. He tells me everything." And if you remember last week, Jonathan had a conversation with Saul. And he said, "Don't try and kill David. He's my friend. He's okay." And Saul said, "All right, you've convinced me. David will be safe." And Jonathan wants so desperately to believe that his father won't go back on his word. He wants to believe that everything can be okay. Now, we might criticize Jonathan for being naive, because if you've been reading the story, it's pretty clear that Saul's out to get David. There's not really that much of a question. But think about the place that Jonathan finds himself. He's the son of the king, the first king of Israel. This is his dad, the one who raised him. And he's talked to him, and his dad said, "All right, I'll lay off." And now his best friend comes and says, "Your dad is still trying to kill me." What does he do? He's caught in this tension. He's caught in between this situation. We live in a culture where loyalty to family is somewhat muted. Imagine this ancient Near Eastern culture where that was everything. And David comes essentially asking Jonathan to betray his father. Listen to what David asks in verse 8. Therefore, this is David speaking, deal kindly with your servant. For you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. But if there is guilt in me, kill me yourself, for why should you bring me to your father? David says, deal kindly with me. This is a request for loyalty. He refers to a covenant they made together, probably back in 1 Samuel 18:3, which reads, Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as his own soul. Because of this covenant, David says, Jonathan, betray your father and choose me. And he knows that he's asking a lot from his friend. So he proposes this test. They'll have this story. David's supposed to be at this royal feast, and he's going to skip it. And Jonathan will say, well, David asked to go be with his family, and I said, that's fine. And they'll see how Saul responds. If Saul says, oh, sure, no problem, then they'll know everything's fine. But if he gets mad, if he flips out, they'll know he's really out to get him. And it seems from just reading it like they're trying to test Saul. They're trying to figure out whether Saul really does want to get David. But we know he does. We've been reading the story. David knows that Saul is out to get him. Everybody in the nation knows that Saul is out to get David. The only person that isn't convinced yet is Jonathan. This test is for the sake of Jonathan to realize what's really going on with his father. So he sees that. Jonathan understands the implications of that. And so before he goes through with it, he wants to make sure that things are going to be okay between him and David. Listen to verses 14 and 17. If I am still alive, show me the steadfast love of the Lord, that I may not die. And do not cut off your steadfast love from my house forever, when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. And Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord take vengeance on David's enemies. And Jonathan made David swear again by his love for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Jonathan realizes that he's in dangerous territory. He knows that if he goes through with this, he might be killed. So he wants to make sure that David's on his side, that David has his back, and that if he does die, that David will in fact take care of his descendants. He makes this covenant between the house of David and the house of Jonathan that he asks to last forever. In short, Jonathan wants to make sure that if he's loyal to David, that David will be loyal to him. And isn't this what concerns us a lot of times when we face these situations where we're caught between two loyalties? We want to make sure that if we choose one, that whoever or whatever we choose isn't going to turn around and stab us in the back. We want to make sure if we have to make a choice, that the choice we make is worth our loyalty. Do you know that feeling? Have you felt like this? Maybe you feel like this now, caught between two different loyalties. Where are you torn? What do you do when two of your friends come to you? One says this and the other says that, and you have to decide between them. What do you do when your spouse comes to you and says, your mother is driving me crazy, and why do you always pick her side over me? Or when your boss calls you and says, you got to stay late tonight, but your family is waiting at home. How do you decide when you're torn between two loyalties? If you pick one friend, what if they turn their back? If you pick your job, what if you lose it? If you pick your family, how are you going to pay your bills? How do you decide? I resonate with Jonathan a lot. I want things to be okay. I want everybody to be happy. I want to just go back. Can't you just come back and play harp and we can all sing and hug and maybe sing Kumbaya, and it'll just be one big happy thing. Like, can't we go back to that world? That's what Jonathan wants so desperately to be the case. And up until now, he's been able to be a loyal friend and a faithful son. But that time is coming to an end. David and Jonathan have agreed on this test, and so they implement it. Jonathan has to figure out what's really true. Verses 25 and 26. The king sat on his seat, this is at the royal feast, as at other times, on the seat by the wall. Jonathan sat opposite, and Abner sat by Saul's side, but David's place was empty. Yet Saul did not say anything that day, for he thought, something has happened to him. He's not clean. Surely he is not clean. So they sit down at the feast. You might notice that Saul's sitting against the wall. He wants to be safe. This is a careful guy, maybe even paranoid. He's worried about someone taking him out. And he notices that David's seat is empty, but he plays it cool. He thinks, well, surely something else is going on. There must be a good reason for this. He's trying hard not to get upset. Then the next night comes, verse 27. But on the second day, the day after the new moon, David's place was empty. And Saul said to Jonathan, his son, why has not the son of Jesse come to the meal, either yesterday or today? And Saul's still trying to play it cool. He's churning inside. We can tell that he's furious, but he's trying to just ask a reasonable question. You know this feeling when you're kind of really upset, you're not sure you have reason to be upset, so you try to play it cool and you just ask very gently, oh, so why didn't you do the dishes again tonight? Or, oh, you have to work late again. Okay. Or, oh, yeah, I noticed you're 10 minutes late. You know, you're upset inside, but you're trying to play it cool. That's Saul. So he asks a reasonable question, and Jonathan gives a reasonable answer. This is verses 28 and 29. Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. He said, let me go, for our clan holds a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to be there. So now if I have found favor in your eyes, let me get away and see my brothers. For this reason, he has not come to the king's table. That makes sense. It's a good answer. Reasonable question, reasonable answer. Except this is the point where Saul can't control himself any longer. This is the moment when he erupts. Verses 30 and 31. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom shall be established. Therefore, send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die. And Jonathan's going, I just said he could go be with his family. What's the big deal? But this is where he knows that Saul is out to get David. Saul curses Jonathan. He curses his mother. The language is really cleaned up as they translate it. There's some profanity here in how he refers to Jonathan's mother. Saul has lost it. He's gone off the handle. But Jonathan, you gotta love him. He just wants everything to be okay, so he tries one more time. One last-ditch effort, verse 32. Then Jonathan answered Saul, his father, why should he be put to death? What has he done? He's still trying to reason with Saul. He wants his dad to be reasonable. But there's no reasoning with Saul at this point. In fact, it's almost as if the innocence of David, the fact that he hasn't done anything to deserve this, only makes Saul more angry. It reminds me of Jesus standing before Pontius Pilate, actually. Because when Pilate comes back to the crowd of Jewish leaders, he says to them, I find no guilt in this man. And that's the moment when they go crazy, when they erupt and they scream to release Barabbas and crucify Jesus. See, innocence has a way of infuriating evildoers. So Saul has completely lost it. And the last straw comes in verse 33. But Saul hurled his spear at him, that is Jonathan, to strike him. So Jonathan knew that his father was determined to put David to death. We've known it for a while. David has known it. Everybody else has known it. And now Jonathan knows it. His dad is crazy. He's been sent into a murderous, envious rage, determined to kill David. Imagine what Jonathan feels. Imagine his sense of loss, of hurt, that his dad would turn on his friend and then turn on him. That he'd be so crazy to say, I'm trying to save the kingship for you, but then throw his spear at him. Nothing makes sense anymore. Jonathan has learned the true nature of his father, and there's no going back. Why are we so surprised when the world doesn't do what we want it to do? Why are we shocked when we lose our jobs? Have our companies promised to be loyal to us? Why are we surprised when our government makes decisions that we don't agree with? Are they supposed to do everything the way we want? Why are we stunned when our children don't call us, or our friends don't remember us, or our spouses don't pay attention to us? We expect so much loyalty from the world around us, and it hurts when our eyes are opened and we realize the things we thought ought to be loyal to us, ought to treat us well, don't. Have you experienced this? A moment when your eyes were opened, maybe to the true nature of a friend, or family member, or a spouse, or company. You thought people were better than they were, but then you found out the truth. Have your eyes been opened? We recently saw the musical Into the Woods as a family. It's one of my favorite musicals. And there's this song called I Know Things Now. It's sung by Little Red Riding Hood right after she meets this charming wolf who swallows her. And then this baker comes along and cuts open the wolf's stomach and saves her from the wolf. Very plausible storyline. And she sings this song that goes like this. I know things now, many valuable things than I hadn't known before. And she goes on to recount all the lessons she's learned about which types of wolves to trust. And she concludes, isn't it nice to know a lot and a little bit not? See, I think we'd rather not know some of these things. It's painful when you realize that someone or something that you thought had your interests in mind turns out not to. But the truth is, as hard as those moments are, they're a gift. It's a gift to have our eyes open, to see what's really true. We'd rather those things not be true. We'd rather we could all just sit around and be nice. We'd rather the world be a friendlier place. But given that our dads are crazy, or our companies are mean, or our friends are forgetful, wouldn't we rather know the truth? Wouldn't we rather be aware than be naive? We need to know what's true if we're going to decide where do we actually put our loyalty. So Jonathan has had this painful moment. He's discovered the truth. His father is not who he thought he was. And so he goes forward with this plan to betray his dad and tell David of his father's intentions. Verses 34 and 36. And Jonathan rose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had disgraced him. In the morning, Jonathan went out into the field to the appointment with David and with him a little boy. And he said to his boy, run and find the arrows that I shoot. As the boy ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. Now, David and Jonathan had set up this code involving how far he shoots an arrow so he could communicate to David whether or not Saul was out to get him. So he shoots this arrow, and he lets David know the truth, that Saul's out to get him. He betrays his father, and he chooses his friend. Jonathan is a traitor. He's a traitor to the nation. He's a traitor to his family. He's realized that you have to betray one side if you're going to choose another. That's what real loyalty is. It's painful because it involves choosing. Now, this method of communicating via arrows isn't enough for Jonathan and David. They have to process this painful thing that they've just experienced. And so they eventually meet up, verses 41, the first part of 42. And as soon as the boy had gone, David rose from beside the stone heap and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. And they kissed one another and wept with one another, David weeping the most. Then Jonathan said to David, go in peace, because we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord shall be between me and you, and between my offspring and your offspring forever. This moment that they've realized is so painful that they have to grieve together the loss of innocence, realizing who Saul really is. Now, this passage sometimes leads to the question of whether the relationship between David and Jonathan was more than friendly. Some scholars suggest that this describes that they had a sexual relationship. Now, there is a lot of textual reasons why that suggestion simply won't hold water. For one thing, male affection in this culture was much more common, so this language was much more appropriate and understanding. Secondly, homosexuality was not condoned at all, so to present the king of Israel in such a light would never have happened in the Old Testament. And finally, I think it says more about our culture and how we read into things that we view a sexual relationship here than it says about the original culture. We have had some conversations about same-sex issues. We had a roundtable last year about that topic. We're going to have another one coming up in a month or two, so keep your eyes open if you'd like some more information on that, but just wanted to identify that issue here before we move on. The point of this scene is to see the tenderness between these two friends because of the pain that they had experienced. They mourn the fact that Saul is who he is, but they take comfort in the fact that they can be loyal to each other. And not just because they are trustworthy, but it's because the Lord stands between them. He's the one that holds them together. He's the one that holds their offspring together. Loyalty is painful because true loyalty means you pick a side. What about us? A lot of us don't want to make a choice. And part of our problem is that we don't realize that there is a conflict out there. See, it's okay to drink Coke today and Pepsi tomorrow, because Coke and Pepsi aren't really at war with each other. But if the Coke people say, all right, suit up, we're going to go to battle against the Pepsi people, then you got to choose. And I think we'd all agree the choice is obvious, right? I won't tell you what the choice is. See, you can pick two options if they're all just options on a complicated playing field, but as soon as there's a conflict, as soon as there's a war, you got to choose. That's why in the New Testament, the author James writes this in James 4, verse 4. You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. He's trying to drive home the point that the things of this world are at war with the things of God. It is not possible to be loyal to both. You can't stay in the middle. A choice has to be made. The question for us is who we will choose. Will we choose the things of the world, or will we choose Christ? Whom will you choose? Now, before we get confused, we have to make a few things clear. James doesn't say friendship with the people of the world is enmity with God. It's not as if we're supposed to be mean to everybody out there or reject anybody that's not a believer. What James is talking about is the systems of the world, the ego-driven, self-centered structures of the world that are the only option for a life without Christ. And choosing Christ looks different for each of us. It's not as if choosing Christ means you come out of this Christian mold, this perfect little Christian image, and you listen to this type of music and wear that type of clothes and have this type of hairstyle. Choosing Christ looks different for each one of us. We're talking about Jesus, the Son of David, who was there at creation, who died on the cross to redeem the people he loves, and who will come back to restore the world. And we're talking about figuring out what my relationship with that living Christ means and how that calls me to reject the things of the world. It's different for you. It's different for the person sitting next to you. The question is, who will you choose? And what does it look like for you to choose Jesus over the things of the world? Jonathan wanted to make sure before he chose David that David would have his back. And we might want to make sure of the same thing. Is Christ really there for us? Will God really take care of us? And the answer is yes. The answer is nothing in this world, no one in this world will be loyal to you to the degree that Jesus Christ will be. Not your company, not your parents, not your siblings, not your pastors, I'm sorry to say, not your church, no one. You can't expect ultimate loyalty from anyone except for Jesus, the one who laid down his life for your sake so that you might live forever. The things of this world will let us down, and there is a grieving process when we realize that. But wouldn't we rather know that so we can make the right choice? Jonathan chooses David. Will you choose the son of David? There's one more detail left in this story, though. There's been this huge climactic moment, this incredible choice, this realization that Jonathan goes through. But then the chapter concludes at the end of verse 42. And he rose, that is David, and departed. And Jonathan went into the city. Something incredibly important had happened. Jonathan had learned the hard truth about Saul. He chose his friend over his father. They reaffirmed their covenant. And then what? Life went back to normal. David leaves. Jonathan goes back into the city. Where? Back to his father, back to the court. Now, we don't hear a lot about Jonathan's relationship with Saul moving forward, but Jonathan returns. We hear about Jonathan a little bit later when he encounters David again, and then finally at the end of 1 Samuel when he dies fighting faithfully for his father. See, Jonathan goes back. He makes this monumental choice, and then he goes back, right back into the place where all the tension was caused in the first place. And this is what we do. After we realize that the world doesn't have our back, after we choose Christ, after we decide that the things of God are the things that are going to rule our lives, we go back to work. Or we go back to school, or we go back to our families, or we watch TV, or whatever it is we do, and life's normal. We go back into the world having chosen Christ. Why? Because Jesus goes into the world. That's where he's headed. That's where he calls us. So we choose Christ, and then we follow him back into the source of tension in the first place. We started out this morning by thinking about a difficult choice that Anakin Skywalker had to make. The Jedi or the dark side? And of course, Anakin made the wrong choice. He becomes Darth Vader. Well, that scene in the third movie of Star Wars is actually echoed three movies later, where once again, Anakin, now Darth Vader, has a choice to make. The scene comes up where he is again seeing Chancellor Palpatine, now the Supreme Emperor of the Galactic something, is doing his Jedi zapping stuff. But now, on the other end of that, is his son, Luke. And Darth, sweet little Darth, has to decide, whom do I choose now? And this is his moment of redemption. Now he chooses his son. Now he chooses the Jedi, and he picks up the wrinkly emperor guy and throws him into the pit, and everybody rejoices. Maybe you feel like Anakin. Maybe you've made some choices you regret. Maybe you've chosen the dark side. Maybe you have given up on people you ought to have been loyal to. Well, the good news about God is that he gives us second chances and third chances and fourth chances. Over and over again, we have new chances to choose Christ, to choose God over the things of the world. There is a one-time choice. There is a moment, there could be a moment for you where you choose Jesus. And if you haven't done that, if you don't know Christ, then by all means, talk to me, talk to Kathy, come to the prayer team. But if you have, there's still these daily moments where over and over again you're torn and your eyes are opened. You see what's really true and you have to make a painful choice and you go through this process and then you go right back in the world and you do it all over again the next day and the next. So be encouraged. Jonathan had the courage to make a difficult choice. We can follow in his footsteps. choose Christ over the things of the world. Choose him again and again, and follow him as he leads you back into the world. Amen.